Imagine discovering that your mother's remains have been found 5 years after her disappearance, only to be immediately thrown into a murder investigation where bodies are dropping according to a mathematical pattern. This is the reality Cassie Hobbs faces in All In. Her mother's skeleton, wrapped in a royal blue shawl with a pressed flower in the left hand, bears a mysterious symbol etched into the wooden coffin, seven circles forming a heptagon around a cross. Before she can process this revelation, Cassie and her fellow teenage FBI consultants are summoned to Las Vegas, where three bodies have been discovered in 3 days at three different casinos. Each victim has a seemingly random number inked onto their body, 3213, 4558, and 9144. The pattern is clear: three bodies, three casinos, 3 days, and the killer is just getting started.
What makes these teenagers qualified to work with the FBI? Each possesses an exceptional natural ability. Cassie builds psychological profiles from minimal information. Dean, raised by his serial killer father, can think like a murderer. Michael reads emotions with uncanny accuracy. Leah detects lies effortlessly. Sloane possesses photographic memory and extraordinary mathematical abilities. Their shared trauma has forged them into a makeshift family. When Michael returns from Christmas with hidden bruises from his abusive father, they silently rally around him. When Sloane becomes agitated returning to her hometown of Las Vegas, they protect her without question. Their bond runs deeper than friendship. They understand each other's pain in ways no one else can. As Leah warns Cassie, the team is at issue capacity and can't handle another emotional crisis, a testament to how deeply they've come to rely on each other.
When the fourth victim is discovered with 2333 carved into her wrist, Sloane makes a breakthrough. These aren't random numbers, but segments of the Fibonacci sequence, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13. More disturbing still, when plotted on a map of the Las Vegas Strip, the murder locations create a perfect Fibonacci spiral, a pattern found in everything from Nautilus shells to galaxy formations. Each killing moves inward along the spiral's curve, with all remaining murders predicted to occur within the sprawling Majesty Casino complex. The pattern's complexity extends beyond location into precise timing. Cross-referencing cold cases reveals similar killing sprees dating back to the 1960s, each featuring exactly 9 victims killed on Fibonacci-derived dates. The methods follow a precise cycle: drowning, burning, impalement, strangling, knifing, beating, and poisoning. Each series spans exactly 21 days, another Fibonacci number. This isn't the work of a lone killer, but potentially a secret society orchestrating elaborate killing sequences for generations.
As the investigation intensifies, personal connections emerge. Sloane encounters her biological half-brother, Aaron Shaw, whose father, the powerful Grayson Shaw, has never acknowledged Sloane's existence. Meanwhile, Cassie becomes increasingly obsessed with her mother's case, recognizing similarities between the symbol on her mother's coffin and patterns in their current investigation. The stakes escalate when Michael discovers numbers etched on his arm, 7761, identifying him as the next target. Despite the danger, he insists on serving as bait, refusing to run because it doesn't work. It never works. As they prepare for the inevitable confrontation, another shock arrives: a message from Nightshade, the serial killer who murdered Agent Judd's daughter years earlier. Nightshade has been watching them, knows their identities, and seems to be playing a game of his own alongside their current investigation.
With Michael wired and surrounded by FBI agents at the Majesty's Grand Ballroom, the team watches anxiously. Analyzing the victims, Cassie realizes they've missed something crucial. All victims except one are under 25, beautiful, and privileged. More importantly, they all connect to Tori Howard, a stage hypnotist and foster sister to their primary suspect, Beau Donovan. Alexandra resembled Tori from behind, Sylvester shared her profession, Camille died after drinks with Tori, and Michael was targeted near Leah, who resembles Tori. The pattern becomes clear. The final kill was always meant to be Tori herself. But when the lights go out and chaos erupts, it's not Michael or Tori who falls victim. It's Aaron Shaw, Sloane's half-brother. Michael was only ever a stand-in. Aaron was the true target. Sloane collapses in grief, repeating that she had warned her father about this exact date and location. Through interrogation, the team uncovers Beau's haunting past. At age 6, he was found nearly dead in the Mojave Desert, having been deliberately abandoned for 5 days. The trauma left him mute for 2 years. During questioning, Beau reveals a self-carved symbol on his chest, 7 circles forming a heptagon around a cross, identical to the marking on Cassie's mother's coffin. Before they can learn more, Beau convulses and dies from a rare poison. His final words, "I don't believe in wishing," echo a phrase found in cult documents dating back to 1922. The investigation reveals a complex hierarchy. 7 masters form an inner council, the Pythia serves as their oracle and vessel, and at the apex sits 9, a child born to it, groomed from birth to lead. Nightshade reveals that Beau had been selected as their heir apparent, but was cast out after failing an initiation rite. More chillingly, he reveals that Cassie's mother, Sarah, had once held the position of Pythia. With his last bargaining chip, Nightshade directs them to room 2117 at the Dark Angel Hotel Casino, promising they'll find the current Pythia. In the hotel room, Cassie finds a dead woman and a little girl named Laurel who introduces herself as 9. When questioned about the dead woman, Laurel explains she wasn't her mother, but a handler. As Cassie processes this, Laurel opens a silver locket revealing a photograph that shatters Cassie's world. There, clearly dated just 3 months ago, is an image of Laurel standing beside Cassie's mother, alive. "Masters come and masters go, but the Pythia lives in the room," Laurel whispers. At what should have been her mother's funeral, Cassie maintains a carefully crafted facade of grief, watching as an empty casket is lowered into the ground. The deception is necessary to convince any watching cult members that she believes her mother is truly dead. Cassie now understands her mother's disappearance wasn't a murder, but an elevation. She had become the Pythia, a position of power within the cult. Her mission transforms from seeking justice to orchestrating a rescue, navigating between the FBI's investigation and her personal quest to find the masters while protecting Laurel, the only living link to her mother's whereabouts. In the end, All In reminds us that even in our darkest moments, connection offers a path forward. As Cassie stands at the fake grave with her chosen family surrounding her, she finds strength not in vengeance, but in love. The love that will fuel her search for her mother and her protection of young Laurel.